That should do it. So anywho, this is a special weekend, Stephen.
Ah.
You happen to be the guest here in the White Belts and Life podcast on what is almost a holiday for me.
McGregor fight?
Yes, sir. In addition to that, it's kind of like the change of seasons, the culmination of the summer, the transition into fall. I don't know. I just am feeling kind of celebratory. In addition, how could I forget? Our 1,000 download celebratory weekend is also falling on this particular set of days. So you're a guest here on the White Belts and Life podcast at a very special time.
Oh, man, I'm honored. Thanks for having me.
So, Stephen. Steve or Stephen? How would you like to
Steven.
Be referred to? You like the Stephen?
I like
right?
Stephen, man. I don't know why. I just feel like it's more formal. I don't know.
I just, see, I
There's
like
There's too many
Steve.
Steves out there. That's the problem, though. There's way too many of them. We all go by Steve, so I have to change it up.
You have to be one of the few Stevens.
Yes, exactly.
I could appreciate that. But I do like Steve. Steve is like that name. Yeah. I don't know what I mean by that, but I think you understand it somehow.
I
right?
don't know. Yeah, well, I get what you're saying, but...
It's just... This is fucking Steve, man.
Yeah.
Fucking Steve. That is what I'm alluding to. Like, everybody's been in that situation, just like, fucking Steve, man. And whatever Steve is in question has done some sort of transgression.
Hopefully not me.
Probably. A few times. A couple of times.
Yeah, I guess.
He's a sweet guy, our Steven, but... Our Steve. How about your only Steve... At those times, it's like your evil side.
That's fine. I can.
But for today, while you're a guest here on the podcast, you're going to be Stephen, and
okay.
I can accept that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to have you on because one of the tenets of our show here is fitness, the fitness industry, strength training, all that sort of stuff. Because it's kind of, and we are not joined, by the way, by Rick Rabotin. He is taking a week off, so to speak.
Tisk.
He's traveling out there to the suburbs in order to take in the aforementioned McGregor Mayweather fight. So safe travels to our pal Rick. But I wanted to have Steve on because, as I previously mentioned, in regards to the fitness industry, kind of a recurring theme on the show. And I feel as if, of anyone I know, you've had the most quote unquote in the trenches experience as it relates to being a professional trainer. Personal trainer, strength coach, however you'd like to title yourself. And I feel as if the demo, I actually don't have access to the demographic statistics. I wish that I did. I can only figure out where people are listening to this podcast and how they're listening to it, and obviously how many of them are. So I can't actually get any age demographics, but I would have to imagine the people who are listening to this were probably a lot like me when I was between the ages of, say, 18 and 24, in that I was really obsessed with the gym because it was kind of that first foray into self-development for me was strength training.
Same for me, too.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. I feel like it's a very similar story as to how do people end up wanting to become professionals in the industry, in the fitness industry. And I feel as if the actuality of being a professional trainer or a personal trainer and perhaps what you envisioned back when you were that 18 to 24 year old who would be listening to a show like this, perhaps there's a lot of disparity there. So that's why I really wanted to have you on to sort of clear the air, as it were, of what it's really like to be a full-time personal trainer and just work in the fitness industry, general observations, because you're a guy who's been in a lot of different environments as it relates to the fitness industry. You've worked in commercial gyms. You've been a private trainer. You now work in the healthcare setting as it relates to training. So you've seen a little bit of all of it. So I'll start off by asking this. 18-year-old Steve is listening to this. Steven is listening to this right now. Maybe he was Steve back then. We don't know. What would you tell him? What's different? What's something that you would not have expected? What's something that you did expect? Is it exactly what you thought it was?
All right. So 18-year-old Steve. So yeah. It's definitely not what I think I really thought it would be, without a doubt. So a little backstory on me.
Yes.
I started lifting probably when I was in 8th grade, freshman high school. Definitely was somewhat of a meathead after that for a little while. One thing that I told myself to do differently is back in that time, you know, I thought I knew everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think it's definitely a little different from you because you had some good coaches when you started lifting and you've always been pretty good with doing research and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas I did not. So that's something I definitely would have changed, you know, drop my ego, lower my weights a little bit and just do things right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was a meathead when I was younger. I guess it's a lot of meatheads' dreams to become a trainer, a coach of some kind.
A recovering meathead, if you will.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I got into it. College, I did an internship. I had my BS in kinesiology. So,
which is a rarity, I would say. I think a lot of people who end up as trainers, myself included, actually don't have the academic background in kinesiology or A&P or exercise physiology.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it is actually rare. Sad.
Do you think that helped?
With getting me my first job and even, yeah, no, up to this point, I think definitely having my BS in kinesiology helped. It definitely doesn't hurt. But it isn't something that you actually need to be a trainer, as you just said before. I think like for some certifications, you might need just your BS in something. You just have to be a college graduate, but
I know that's the case with NASM.
Is that with NASM? I think you're to get your CSCS, I think you also need that too.
Yeah, I know. I don't think NASM you need any degrees in particular, but I know for NSCA, CSCS, National Strength and Conditioning Association Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist, that's a mouthful.
Yeah,
you do need a bachelor's degree, and I didn't know, does it have to be in a related field or does it just have to be a bachelor's degree, period?
So I used to think it had to be in a related field, but they may have changed the rules.
They probably want more money, so I imagine they probably just made it anything.
Yeah, well, and that's something you have to realize too, all you out there who, you know, are thinking about getting your cert, is that what really comes down to it, your cert matters for, you know, when you're in that interview, you want to be able to have a good cert, but beyond that, it shows nothing about how good of a trainer you are. Anyone can study for a month and pass those tests. It's just the truth.
Is it safe to say that if you're actually using the content that is taught during the certification process, then it's safe to say you are not yet capable of actually helping anyone?
Yep, I agree with that statement 100%.
It really does to be about that additional research. And I feel like that's one thing that you were kind of alluding to there, is that something that has changed for you as a professional in the past, say, 2 years.
Yeah, well, that's like the question you first asked me is that's what I would tell 18-year-old Steve in to do is, you know.
Do your research, young man.
Yeah, do my research.
What were some of the resources that you did use back in the day? Were you looking at, you know, Flex Magazine, bodybuilding.com?
But you go, bodybuilding.com. And then I'd had a weightlifting like partner friend that I'd work out with pretty consistently for like 2 or 3 years. And he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And
but he was that guy. He'd come in and be like, "Yay, bro, I printed out this program."
Exactly. From bodybuilding.com. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing too, is like genetics do play a role in this, and you have to be really careful about who you take your advice from, because there's some really big guys who, in all honesty, really don't know what they're doing. Just because they can do it doesn't mean that they can teach it to you. I can't tell you how many times I've got advice from people, and like looking back, I'm just like, yeah, that was horrible advice. Like, yeah. I remember this one big guy telling me when I was like, I don't know, a junior in high school, that I was need to get my chest a little bit more upright in my squat, so I had to arch my back. Which now, an anterior pelvic tilt, ladies and gentlemen, is not something you want to do when you're squatting.
Trust me. It's in fact such bad advice that we found it, as you and I were kind of tinkering with your mechanics, to literally be your number one issue. So in fact, this gentleman had advised you to do the one thing that you ought not be doing more so than anything else.
Yep.
So it's tough too, because I feel as if there's a lot of high school strength and conditioning programs are great because it gets people like us our first opportunity to be in an environment of strength training, of that self-development, and it kind of teaches young men and women That they can, in fact, change their bodies. That they, if they're unsatisfied with how they look, they can change themselves. They can literally grow themselves if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, there are not very many good coaches, and a lot of these high school kids are just kind of thrown out there with absolutely no supervision or, frankly, bad supervision.
Yeah, my high school football coaches were terrible. They had no idea what they were doing in the weight room. They're all big guys. Like, again, be careful who you take your advice from. They're big dudes. They look like they knew what they were doing, but I can't tell you how many people got hurt. Yep.
Did you guys use the BFS program, Bigger, Faster, Stronger? I know that's super common amongst high school strength and conditioning programs.
No, they didn't.
What kind of programming did you use? Just Wild West, whatever.
Yeah, it was just
whatever,
like,
homeboy printed out off mm-hmm. of Critical Bench.
Yeah, basically. They gave us little programs to follow, but yeah, they weren't very good. They're super basic. Like, let's do 3 sets of 10 this week, and next week you up the weight 5 pounds, and you do 3 sets of 8, or, you know.
Hey, man, linear progression works. God damn it, Mark Ripito. Don't make me get Mark Ripito in here, because I will. Hip drive.
No, it was just not very revolutionary, to say the least. And it was every single athlete followed the same exact program, which to me is
no specificity.
Oh my god, it's a disservice. Because
you were a swimmer, right? Did you play football in high school?
I did. I played football my freshman year, and then I did all the workouts up to the beginning of the sophomore season, basically. And
gotcha.
That's when I quit.
So you were on the freshman team, but never made it to varsity.
Yeah, I never played on. Yeah, well, I never made the JV.
You know, it's funny. You're talking about, like, receiving some bad advice where this guy tells you to arch your back when, in fact, you're susceptible to hyperextension. So it's terrible advice in retrospect. It's sort of ironic in my situation, because I look back, I was always the coach's least favorite because I was pretty big. You know, I'm 6'2". It's hard for me to get any lighter than, say, 220. So back then I was probably, man, 250. 260. Oh. So one of the bigger kids on the team, could bench press the world. I was benching probably mid threes in high school, deadlifting in the 500s. Squat always sucked, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about. But, you know, pretty big, strong, fast kid, but I was just dreadful at football because I just had no movement abilities. I was just very stiff.
You lacked all the technical skills.
And I lacked the technical skills too, but like little basic fundamental structural anatomical things in retrospect, I think, were holding me back. For example, flat-footedness.
Yeah, no, having flat feet.
Flat feet.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I have one foot that's flatter than the other, so I suppose you could say I have both a flat foot and flat feet in general.
There you go. All
right. I'm a rarity.
No, but that definitely would make you pretty crappy at football. Any sport where you really run,
but man, if
not be quick.
There was somebody who just came along one day in high school and said, "Little Corey, don't worry about those bench press numbers, big guy. How about you go do some mobility drills? How about you get your fucking feet fixed?" And all of a sudden, poof, every lift, you know, especially lower body lifts, will improve almost overnight. You'll be a much better athlete. You'll have much better movement skills. Your technical skills will come much easier to you. And even looking back, I always had kind of like joint, not pain, but just like fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
After a practice, I would always feel it a lot, you know, in my ankles and my knees. And not, like I said, pain. It's not so structurally unsound that I would be walking around in pain after exercise or a game or a practice or a game, I should say. But I always feel like, man, something is a little bit more, something's wrong, because all of these joints feel a lot more fatigued than they ought to be. And in reality, you wonder why that was.
Yeah, you had flat feet, man.
I had flat feet, which causes that internal rotation of the femur bone, which causes knock knees. And then your pelvis dumps forward into an anterior tilt because of that inward rotation of the femur.
And your ankles were collapsed. Yeah. Now it's all around.
Chain.
Your flat feet just screwed everything up.
And that really is something I wish would change. And it's such a great opportunity to make that change at the high school level. Number one, fixing those fundamental flaws at that age so that it's not an issue that becomes a snowball sort of issue later in their athletic career. but also just telling kids perhaps what sports they would excel in. Now, I know the general advice for athletic development is to not over-specialize early, right?
Yeah.
So not to take a kid and say, play baseball all year round. That kid's going to end up needing Tommy John surgery. And
yeah, you want kids to wear out dabble on everything when they're young.
Exactly. But there is an age, I imagine it's probably in that 16 to 18-year-old range, where you can say, all right, little Stevie, you know, you're 6'4". You've got really long limbs. You've got long levers. Ironically, you probably would be advised to participate in the sport you actually participated in. But like, hey, little Stevie, maybe don't waste your time playing, you know, baseball. Perhaps you should be a swimmer. And ironically, you were a swimmer.
Or a rower. That's what I really should have done.
Yeah.
I didn't really like swimming that much, so I should have moved on to something a little different. I should have rowed. I would have been a great rower. Again, big levers.
What should I have done?
What should
shot putter?
Corey done?
I could have been a good shot putter.
You would have been a...
Football, honestly, probably was a great choice, but...
Yeah, you're pretty all-around. I think football is probably one of your... It's hard to
wrestling.
Say.
Wrestling.
Wrestling?
We didn't have a wrestling team. It was a goddamn shame. We had a wrestling room. We had the wrestling mats.
But you had no team.
But we did not have a wrestling team.
It makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Anywho, enough of the high school age. I want to get into what you've been able to observe actually working with people. You've worked with far more clientele than I have in your career. And the one thing that I feel as if, you know, the folks listening to this who may be interested in working as a trainer one day, the sort of superpower that you've been able to develop, and they will soon find out if they do in fact enter the industry, that they'll need to develop if they're going to have any sort of staying power, is client retention. So number one, what's it been like? What are some takeaways that you've been able to sort of come upon actually working with people day in and day out? And then also, too, what's your secret sauce? How are you able to retain those clients once you're actually able to get in there, work with them? Is it just building value? Is it, you know, is it the little things, just showing up on time each and every day? What are the logistical things that allow you to retain those clients? As because your percentage has to be really high.
Yeah, no, I've been, you know, pretty lucky in the sense that I have pretty good retention. Always really have. So I feel like it's a little bit of everything, in all honesty. Definitely showing up on times, like little things like that goes a very long way. Like you have to be accountable for yourself. If you're someone you can't show up on time for anything, then you should probably not be a trainer.
Because yeah,
you're late a couple times, man. People are really going to start to disrespect you. And before you know it, you know, that person might just say goodbye.
For people listening, that sounds ultra simplistic, but it cannot be expressed clearly enough how true it really is.
You have to be on time.
It's if you are, these are people in the personal training industry who are paying hundreds of dollars per month because it's an inherently expensive service. You're paying $60, $70, $80 an hour to have access to you. So if they're forking over this amount of cash on an hourly basis and you can't even show up on time for that hour, it's done. It's done before it's even started. You can't even really reschedule on people or alter times for meetings with people for the first few months.
Yeah, no, it's the first couple months are always awkward because you have to be, you know, before you build that rapport with somebody, you can't be late at all. It's tricky.
Would you say that working with people, do you think that you've been surprised at how unprepared most people are? Or would you say that a little bit more on the opposite end of the spectrum, you're actually surprised at what sort of physical training your average Joe is able to partake in, you know, very quickly into their training journey, as it were?
I'd say unprepared before, surprised about their ability. So my own little personal belief too, most people do things like very incorrectly in the gym. People don't give exercise the kind of attention that it really deserves. I think you would agree with me on that.
Absolutely.
Like squats, deadlifts, bench, you know, barbell rows, military press, like all that stuff. It's complicated lifts, you know. So very, very rarely do I find somebody, even someone who's like a strong, like good athlete, actually do something perfectly off the, you know, the get-go. So yeah, people are typically very unprepared for it. But depending on the person, you know, they typically pick up on things fairly quickly, at least quickly enough so that I can really get them going early on. Sometimes there's some like stability and mobility issues that take a little while, and I might have to make some accommodations. Like someone who has terrible thoracic mobility and are like super internally rotated, you know, I'm probably not going to do back squats with, and you know, I can't even get them in a low bar position for the most part. It's really tough to do. Or if I get them down there, they're like, oh my God, my shoulders hurt so much. So, you know, you got to fix that thoracic mobility issue before you really can get into that. But yeah, no, it's, yeah, it's,
how, yep, oh, go ahead,
no, you got it. You got it.
I was going to say, have you found it difficult to tell people how unprepared they are, but yet actually, how do you present that dilemma to them? Do you basically acknowledge, like, hey, I know you want to do all this great stuff, but you are miles away from being able to do it. So, you know, a dose of patience is in order here. Or do you almost disguise that journey for them by saying, oh, don't worry about squats, like that'll come, you know, instead today we're going to do thoracic mobility. Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I definitely disguise it. And yeah, I don't tell someone like, oh yeah, you're this far away from being able to do this. I know you want to do it. Yeah, I don't do any of that. Typically, I just let people know. I was like, hey, we can't do this today because of this reason, but we're going to do this, this, and this, you know. I'm pretty good with when it in regard to that. And even sometimes you have clients that start with you and it might be your plan to work them to doing, you know, like barbell lifts, but they don't really know that, which is another probably, I think, something you were going to bring up with this later on is like, how do you combine, you know, your goals as a trainer for somebody with the goals that they want too? Because sometimes what people want in reality isn't really what they need. You know, like, I can't tell you how many times people are like, oh my God, I would just, you know, I just want to lose weight, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, their bodies are a mess. They have terrible mobility. You know, they were never an athlete before, so their conditioning is terrible. They're super weak. You know, I'm not just going to take a client on and just have them do like step ups on a plyo box and
burpees.
Yeah. I have to fit in turning that person into like, you know, a half decent athlete almost in the process of also keeping them happy. Because as another thing is most people, they judge their workouts off of just, you know, how sweaty and, you know, huffy and puffy they get.
Yeah. I actually have started to, with new clients, literally kind of address the lack of huffy puffy, and I literally call it huffy puffy. I usually make them aware that at the onset of their program, there's going to be not much of that. And in fact, they're going to feel probably for the first few months, you know, if that is in fact the case, if they're that deconditioned or unprepared for most general work we're going to ask them to do, it might be months before they get to the huffy puffy. And I tell them that that is actually the easiest thing for us as trainers to provide.
It's super easy.
Yeah, I always ask them, you know, if you really are about the huffy puffy, that's what you really want out of this, you know, just go do burpees and come see me in an hour. And let me know when you're done.
No, I think it's actually, I forget who told me this quote. It may have been you. I may have read it or a combination. It's probably somebody, I probably read it, but it's somebody that you directed me towards. But it's goes like this. It's basically anyone can gas an athlete. The true question is, can you make them stronger? Anyone can kick someone's butt in a workout. You know, just literally just be like, hey, do 100 burpees in a row. You tell a professional athlete to do 100 burpees in a row, they're going to be, you know, huffing and puffing a little bit afterwards. Like, yep. You know, yeah, doing that is not hard whatsoever. What's hard is actually, you know, really changing something in someone's strength, their posture,
their pain,
yes, if they have back pain, knee pain, all that kind of stuff, fixing those issues. And yeah, I feel like, and that kind of is another answer to one of your questions earlier, is, you know, what was that question actually? I have the vague.
Perhaps is the one where I said, you know, what is more surprising to you, the lack of or the lack of preparation most people have, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, are you surprised by their ability to do advanced movements right off the bat? So I think what you're saying is largely probably congruent with the former in that case, is, you know, have the patience to really learn those primary movement patterns. Make this more of an educational thing before it becomes a kick your ass thing.
Yeah.
You know, have that. It should literally almost be the first phase, quote unquote, of every program for a new client, is an education phase. And one of the things you'll encounter, I know you've encountered, I've encountered it, you get a lot of people who want a personal trainer, but frankly, they're not willing to pay for it. So they're going to come to you and they're going to say, hey, I want a routine I can do on my own. The old self-routine. It's a very common foe for us in the training industry. And it's so frustrating to have to deal with someone who's just so not knowledgeable about the overall field and subject. I don't think it's a problem that they're not that way, but it just is very difficult for us in such a short period of time to express to them that this is a subject of study. An analogy that I like to use to try and, you know, shut this sort of client down is to say, what you're asking me is akin to going into a chemistry class at a local university and asking the professor to give you one single sheet of notes. And that if you continually studied this sheet of notes, eventually you would one day earn your PhD or just become a competent chemist.
That's a good analogy.
It does not exist. There's absolutely no way that I can give you a routine, quote unquote routine, program, what have you, that will always be appropriate from now until forever. That does not exist. That is taking a far too simplistic view of literally kinesiology, biology, anatomy, and physiology as a field.
Yeah, no.
It's disrespectful, honestly. I've always tried to, obviously, don't come right out and say that to someone and yell at them for disrespecting your field when they ask you for a routine, but try and sell them on that journey. Right now, you know, the goal, if they're willing to endure that initial education period, I should say, I don't know what a period is. If they're willing to endure that initial education period, it becomes teaching a man to fish rather than catching a fish for them. That's at least, I'm just throwing these analogies out.
Yeah, you have really good analogies. Thanks, man. I have to say, man, you're pretty good at that. You're a good talker. You always have been.
Yeah, I don't shut up, unfortunately. I don't have enough people to talk to in my day-to-day. That's actually another thing. Kind of perfect segue by you, Steven. The energy to consistently keep up with your clientele, and I'll say it, to consistently care. That is something, I'll be completely honest, I had asked you the question about what you would tell 18-year-old Steven. What I would tell 18-year-old Corey, who may be interested in being a coach or a trainer, is that just because you enjoy training yourself does not mean that you will enjoy training others. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. In addition to that, as a full-time trainer, and you can agree or disagree with this, you will see that your own training will consistently suffer.
Yeah, agree. I agree.
Kind of the great irony of the field, right?
Yeah, no. It's tough. It really is. Especially the more booked up you get, the less time you have on your hands as well.
Yeah.
To be a full-time trainer and really stay in shape is tough. But
you're just, it's like any other job. It's like going home from your roofing job and working on your own roof.
Yeah, No, it's like another good analogy.
You just don't want to do it any longer. It just you get very sick of it. And I'll be honest, I did a lot of research always because I was trying to learn more about how to perfect my own issues. And turns out I had a lot of issues, thus I did a lot of research. But I'll be honest, I never really put myself in the mental space as a young person interested in getting into the fitness industry of, you know, all everything I'm learning is to be applied to other people. Because I don't think that as a professional trainer, I could do what you do. I don't think I could just train people all day. I can't. And this is so contrary to what I would have believed. I thought I was going to be this trainer who was going to be sending people emails every night of all sorts of articles to read and constantly being in touch with them, asking them what they're eating, this, that, and the other thing. And I hate to say it, but I'm actually more of the opposite style of trainer. I'm kind of just like, hey, show up. I'll give you a good workout and, you know, I'll send you on your way. And I have my little handful of clients that, you know, I take very, very seriously and I do my best to make sure that they're getting the results that they need. But if that group of five became a group of 10, 15, man, I think I'd burn myself out because I just don't love training others that much.
Yeah, no, so with me, in regards to that, I have difficulty with the same thing to a degree. It's tough, especially when you have so many people that you're training.
How many clients do you have?
Currently, I'm probably... Because
you're in the healthcare setting now, so a lot of people that you work with are working at the same healthcare facility. So you're working with a lot of people who, you know, are doctors, nurses, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with a lot of those people. I'd say I probably have like 20 clients currently. Okay. I train a couple of them like multiple hours a week, though, so it adds up.
Gotcha.
But, yeah.
What's the most clientele you've ever had, say, in a given month? Have you ever had a month where you're responsible for training, say, 40 people?
Maybe not 40, but like 35.
Jeez. That's
a lot of people.
For people who...
Every week.
Because think about it this way. When you say 35 hours, 35 clients, that is not 35 hours.
No, it's probably like 60 hours.
That's about 60 hours of training. Mm-hmm. And that is 60 hours of literally unavoidable work.
Yeah, no, it's hands-on work. You can't just, you know.
You're not just clocked in and like staring off into space or at a web page that's not relevant to your job.
You're not paying solitaire or playing solitaire on your laptop or anything like that. You're sitting, you know, you're hands-on teaching people how to do stuff. You're picking weights
up.
You're
talking.
You're walking around.
Oh,
it's tiring.
Talking.
Talking constantly. That's why having good relationships with your clients is a bonus, because it's definitely much easier to train people you see as friends than looking at them as clients, which is something I say I do a good job of. You know, this is a field where if you don't like people, don't do it. If you're just some, you know, meathead right now at the gym and you like working out, but you're kind of, you know, a loner to yourself, you don't like interacting with other people, you get bothered by it, do not become a trainer.
Yeah.
Because you'll get driven crazy. You have to really like people, want to get to know them. Build some rapport that way when you're actually with these people, you know, you have like training for 4 hours in a row. You know, it gets much easier when you can really have a good conversation with someone while you're training them.
Another thing too, you know, thinking back, you were talking about, you know, if you're not a people person, don't do this. I think a lot of people kind of have this. So Joe DeFranco, I've talked about on this show before, but I've talked about it a lot to people who, when I kind of regale the tale of myself getting into training, he's one of the first coaches whom I became obsessed with learning from. And I had this idea like, yeah, I'm going to open a hardcore gym and train athletes and blah, da, 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 da. Here's the thing about that whole idea. There's not a ton of money in that. There's a couple of facilities in the world, of which DeFranco's is undoubtedly one, that can make money off of being that hardcore garage gym, only training intense athletes type of facility. Most people who decide to get into personal training or coaching, you're looking at working with the general population.
Agreed.
Unless you happen, even if you look at Joe DeFranco, I mean, there's a lot of factors that, I mean, beyond hardworking that guy is. I don't want to ever take away from what he did, but he was in a major metropolitan area. He was in northern New Jersey, really close to where a lot of sports teams that play in New York are headquartered. He was in a town with a lot of really competitive high school sports, and a couple of those high school athletes he worked with, partly due to his excellent training, went on to become professional athletes, which helped market his facility. There's a lot of really specific circumstances that helped a guy like that out. And unless you've got an investor, you're not going to be able to open up like an Exos performance center that's a million square feet and, you know, has 85 squat racks and all this stuff. If you're looking for, you know, starting a local, intense, hardcore garage athletic training facility, or just training powerlifters, for example. Oh, I love powerlifting. I'm going to train powerlifters. Good luck paying your bills training only powerlifters when the best powerlifters in the world are lifting in a firehouse somewhere.
Yep.
Now, powerlifting, I guess, has kind of had a resurgence here in that the sport's way more popular than it was even when I was competing in it back in high school. But the money in training is training general population, professional type people, probably in a major metropolitan area.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Thing. You know, go be a personal trainer in Scranton. See how you do.
Yeah, no, good luck with that.
I tried. It didn't work. But, you know, in you're probably going to be working with people who are, as we said before, professionals, doctors, lawyers, nurses, things of that nature.
Business owners, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they can afford the training. And that's kind of another, going back to what we said about how absolutely pivotal it is that you're on time, you know, keeping a constant schedule, being punctual. These are people who are very successful, and that is why they can afford the personal training in the first place.
Yeah, personal training is a luxury product.
Very luxury product.
It always cracks me up when you have like a hard sell PT guy telling someone that, you know, they need this or they're going to die or something along those lines to some like, you know, overweight person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a luxury. Not everybody can afford it. If everyone could, everyone would have a trainer, but, you know, not everyone can.
That's actually something I've learned too, is I kind of like to pride myself in that I know my stuff as it relates to training. I feel like I couldn't throw a rock in any which direction and hit somebody who knows more about strength training than I do, but that still doesn't mean I can go without a coach. You still, even a coach needs a coach. And just even having, you know, a couple of times you've observed my technique and pointed out things that were very, very wrong. And I think that's another thing that, you know, I would probably tell that younger version of myself listening to a show like this is, you know, you may think that you're an expert, but that does not necessarily mean you're immune to coaching and immune to good advice.
That's, very true. I just came up with an idea. I'll tell you about it after this podcast.
Okay. I like
when
ideas.
You were saying that.
You can't tell White Belt Nation, Steve. You got to keep it hidden. But
I don't want to go off topic too far.
Okay, that's fair enough. What was your favorite setting in which to work? Because as I said, you are, you know, somebody who's worked in basically every fitness sort of setting. Because you've been doing this since you've graduated from college. It's really the only field you've ever worked in, correct?
Agreed, yeah. I mean, like professional field, if you're going to call it professional. Yeah. Yeah.
And you had an internship, I presume, if you were a kinesiology major?
Yep, I did have an internship.
Where was that?
That was up at Penn State, actually.
Working with one of the athletic teams?
No, actually, it was, it was, believe it or not, a CrossFit gym that was up there.
Huh.
I actually had a pretty good mentor, though. Really good guy, Jeff.
Shout out, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, he's a good dude.
Do you know Jeff's last name?
I do. Jeff Welsh.
Jeff Welsh. Great guy you are.
He is a good dude. No, but he gave me some references to read. This is, again, though, a time when I was still a little cocky and thought I knew stuff, so I didn't kind of do as much with that as I probably should have. But no, he was a good guy. He pushed me in the right direction and really got me to realize that I wanted to be a trainer when I did that internship. Because before that, I first did a little internship with physical therapy office, and that's originally what I went to college for, is to become a physical therapist. And I just realized I just didn't like it at all.
I'm not super sold on physical therapy's worthiness. Would you agree with that?
What do you mean by worthiness? Just like,
I feel as if a lot of people, so this is an interesting question. This is going to lead into a whole tangent, so apologies in advance.
Well, you're good.
So I feel as if the industry as a whole, physical therapy and strength training, are starting to overlap a little bit.
Yep.
And I feel
where
as
going
if
with this.
Yeah, I feel as if physical therapists get a little bit of extra respect that perhaps they don't. Physical therapists are starting to pop up as strength coaches now. And I think we have to acknowledge that they are inherently different things. And I feel as if the fields are starting to overlap a bit too much, to the point where if a physical therapist writes a strength training book, it is revered a bit more than if your average personal trainer, and I know that individuals are going to have different qualifications and, you know, be of different quality, blah, 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 blah. But I just am a little bit frightened of a future in which, you know, a strength training book sells more copies because somebody has DPT at the end of their name, Doctor of Physical Therapy, when in reality, I think that the argument can be made that their influence in the overall field of strength and conditioning has actually been somewhat negative. And I think it's certainly been negative in my own circumstance. I think that the craze of mobility and range of motion is gotten a little bit too much out of hand, to the point where you got people going into gyms now and warming up for an hour and a half, doing two barbell movements and leaving.
Oh man, you're dissing Kelly. I'm just messing with
you.
He
is under a little bit of fire right now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, no, Kelly Stratt is definitely a little. He's under some fire.
I can't understand a word that guy says.
He talks really fast. He's definitely very smart.
Yes, and I don't think he's a bad coach at all. I think he's an amazing coach. I would pay whatever the hell he charges to work with him. But I just think generally, it's a very slippery slope as it relates to this sort of obsession with mobility and range of motion training. Because at the end of the day, you know what is pretty good at, first of all, what are you developing range of motion for? Is something, you know, more often than not, I don't think someone needs to do a ton of mobility work to prepare for a deadlift. If you lack the mobility to bend over and pick up a bar off of the floor, then perhaps you do need a physical therapist because something may be critically wrong.
Agreed. Or at the very least, if you don't have mobility to get down there, just, you know, bump it up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, lift from a platform of, you know, get your client or yourself to a nice neutral spine. You know, if you have to, you know, put that on some bumpers, you have to bump that weight up off the ground a little bit. I think that's fine. I feel like it's better to do that than it is to try to pull from the floor or
still get some work done there.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than do, you know, 45 minutes of mobility drills.
Exactly. And which might not even help you because your issue is probably not mobility. It's, as we've both come to learn recently, mobility and stability are very closely different, related and kind of interlocked with one another. Like if you have some mobility issue, you know, you're rounding your lower back at the bottom of your squat, it might be that you're just not stabilizing yourself all the way at the bottom of your squat. It might have nothing to do with the fact that your hamstrings are tight. They're just firing up because your core is not working. There's some abdominal or some hip muscle that's not firing and your hamstrings are taking over for that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's why you fall into that bad position. Because, yeah, I feel like as they do more and more studies or as, you know, time goes on, we'll find that mobility issues, you know, actually having a muscle that's shortened or tight is actually way more rare than we believe it to be today. I feel like it's really stability is king, you know.
Have you really ever encountered a client who was, I'm sure you have, but like how common is it to have somebody like, oh, such and such is really tight. Let's just loosen it up. And all of a sudden, they're great. I feel as if that's a little bit more rare. I haven't seen a ton of improvements to range of motion.
I have not either. The first book I ever got, now again, like not dissing Kelly Stroud. He is, again, a great coach, but the first book I ever got was his, and I would take people through all these mobility drills and stretches and working with them, and, you know, there would be some change, but nothing ever that drastic, and if you did get from A to B, it would take me, you know, a decent amount of time to do that. It wasn't like, you know, in his videos, it's always like a 15-minute fix, and like, you know, maybe he's able to create that, but I'm telling you right now, not many other people can. Through doing that stuff, I definitely was not. Now, at the same time, if someone, I'm looking at someone's squat and, you know, they're super bent over, they're really not sitting in, and I have them do a side plank, give them a little internal rotation of the hip, you know, and then a just normal forearm plank, you know, typically after doing that, and I tell them to squeeze their abs as they're going down, boom, that squat's fixed.
Sort of like pulling themselves down rather than just, you know, free falling.
Exactly. You're just getting to activate their core muscles, tell them to do it, you know, squeeze them just like you were when you're doing those planks, and boom, you have a really awesome looking squat.
It sounds simplistic, but sometimes your body just doesn't know how to do something.
No, it's the truth. Yeah.
I've had situations with people that one of my favorite drills is for someone who kind of runs into their hips a little bit during a squat, maybe has a very shallow squat. Little things like, you know, doing a wall squat where they're squatting down, but their butt's kind of brushing up against the wall behind them. Things like that, all of a sudden, they literally just are made aware almost neurologically that they have a greater range of motion than maybe they thought.
Yeah.
And it kind of teaches them how to get into a position that they didn't previously know they had access to. And things like that are what I've seen instantaneous range of motion improvements from. Whereas this endless amount of static stretching and, you know, that whole idea of tightness could be being caused by misalignment, not necessarily just a shortened muscle.
Agreed. So, muscles are tightening up because they're compensating for something not working correctly.
Not because they're just inherently short and tight.
Agree. Yep. We agree on that.
You had mentioned CrossFit too, and I didn't want to just gloss over that because I think that's a very interesting topic. I think fair to say if I was 18 now, I bet you I would have became a CrossFit person. Dude. I bet you that would have attracted 18-year-old Corey. Would have it attracted 18-year-old Steven? And if yes or if no, what are your overall thoughts on it?
CrossFit, that is. 18-year-old Steven, probably, actually. I think it would. Just because I didn't know anything at that point in time.
Also, you know, the marketing for it is so great for what I was always looking for at that age. What I was always looking for at that age was like, I want to be the complete athlete. I want to be big, fast, strong, jacked. And that's literally CrossFit's marketing. It's like, you know, the best of every form of fitness. And obviously I don't think it ends up being that way in practice, but, what are your thoughts on CrossFit? Do you like it? Your average person that say would come to you and become a new client. Do you think it's appropriate for someone like that to be doing CrossFit? Do you think it's something to aspire to be able to do? Perhaps they're an out of shape office worker right now, but after working with somebody like you, getting a little bit better shape, would you ever feel comfortable referring somebody out to a CrossFit gym? I guess just general thoughts.
So I'd say no to all of those questions, actually.
That's why I asked so many questions there, because I knew the answer to all of them was going to be no. Yeah. So you can just get a nice general sweeping no.
Yeah, it's CrossFit. No, it's not great. Like we've already said before, you know, most people that do CrossFit are typically general population. You have a lot of athletes sprinkled in there too, without a doubt. But yeah, any of my clients who first came to me, if they first went to a CrossFit gym, they'd probably all be jacked up at this point in time, like knees, back, everything, you know. The programming is pretty poor on most gyms. And that's another thing too, which with CrossFit is there are probably actually a few CrossFit gyms out there that have great programming and great coaches.
For sure.
But it's a franchise. So yeah. There's, you know, there's no
unity.
They
have the creative freedom to coach anything they so choose.
Yeah. So most, in, you know, if you're following the WOD of the day off the CrossFit webpage, then...
It's kind of ironic, isn't it? If they actually listen to CrossFit HQ, that actually is an indicator that they're a terrible CrossFit gym.
Yep.
It's works. I always joke that, you know, if you are involved with strength and conditioning or at least researching strength and conditioning for a long enough period of time, you kind of constantly brush up against, you know, these different modalities. You have different training modalities that have the associated sports, you know, that are a way to compete in the aforementioned modalities. You have powerlifting, bench, squat, deadlift. You have bodybuilding, which is, you know, it's not necessarily associated with any particular exercises or lifts, but it is kind of a philosophy of training. You have strongman, which is kind of a little bit of both. It's definitely a philosophy of training, but it's also centered around a particular few events. You have, you know, yoga is another example. You just, all these different modalities, and obviously there's a kernel of truth in each of them, and, you know, there's not one modality that's going to work for absolutely everybody. There's definitely the unique snowflake sort of idea mm-hmm. thrown in here at some point. You know, what may work for Steven may not work for Corey and vice versa. But it's pretty much universally agreed upon that Olympic weightlifting and gymnastics are two of the most
challenging,
complex, and thus risky training modalities available for someone to participate in.
And you throw powerlifting in there too, which is, you know, is no joke either. Yeah.
But it's even before that, let's just stick with Olympic weightlifting and gymnastics training. Two of the most difficult training modalities available to someone on earth. Then we take the idea of conditioning. Conditioning is something that is typically done with very simple movements because mm-hmm. it's about the movement and the energy system development, not about doing these complex exercises with any degree of difficulty. You want to do very simple movements because someone's going to be doing a lot of the movements under fatigue.
You don't want to be creative.
And thus it becomes an exercise of repetition and not technicality or intensity. Fair to say?
Yes.
So what CrossFit has done is take those aforementioned and really complex modalities, Olympic weightlifting and gymnastics training, and they have put them in circuits, metabolic conditioning circuits. So you have taken the two most complex, difficult, and risky training modalities in the world, and you have organized them in a circuit cardio fashion. That is asinine, in my opinion. I'm not the greatest strength coach in the world, but that is my opinion. I think that is wildly inappropriate for most people to do. But as you have said, not every single CrossFit gym will do that. So you have to be very specific. Those of you out there who are considering going to a CrossFit gym, you may be lucky in that you live one, you know, very close to one of the good ones who comes up with independent programming. They hire a full-time coach who writes all the programs, who's mindful and constantly doing research. Or you just get somebody who is trying to make a dime off of a quote-unquote boot camp class and thinks that by paying the CrossFit franchise fee, they'll attract more people into the doors.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You basically, you hit the nail right on the head.
That was my CrossFit rant. You know how long I've been waiting to show the world my CrossFit rant? I have to pee out of my giant wiener. I'm going to pause this and come right back.
Yep, go for it.
All right, we are back. I peed out of my giant wiener, Steven.
Yep.
It's glorious.
You did. All right.
So going back to the actual journey, because that's, I think, what I would want someone who is listening to this to take away the most is to give like the nitty gritty of how you actually got to the point where you don't have to do anything else other than train people. Most people who are personal trainers or are trying to become personal trainers do it on a part-time basis for a very, very long time. And you're at the point where you literally pay your bills, you know, instructing strength training.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who would like to be at that point eventually. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what that actual journey was like. What are some low points? What's it really like?
God.
I know you told me, you know, an example of just like, you know, the quote unquote grind to sort of work your way towards the top or to the point where you're at, you know, where you're at and being full time and able to live comfortably being a personal trainer. You know, how long did it take to get from zero to 30 clients?
All right. So it took a little while. It's definitely a journey and not a very easy one. It's pretty tough at first. So I started my personal training career at LA Fitness, believe it or not. And I wasn't even a trainer because I didn't have my cert at first. I was just one of the salespeople.
It's funny, though, that you're qualified to sell the training if you don't have a cert. Yeah. So you're actually literally the first person people are working with.
Yep. And I worked there for a month and 2 weeks. So like, yeah, 1.5 months. And then I got the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I was, yeah, no, it's just really bad. They, and I guess that's one of the things you got to realize. A lot of people starting out can't just, you know, rent some space somewhere and be like, hey, everybody, come here and train with me. Like, you have to kind of build a book up and, like, learn something by just kind of doing it for a little while.
Even after the internship, this was, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So you had already worked for free.
Yes, I did.
And you basically continued to work for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got paid minimum wage at LA Fitness because you have to hit a certain amount in sales. It's pretty astronomically large, at least when I was there. And if you didn't hit that number every 2 weeks, you didn't get a bonus. So you basically got paid minimum wage to make them thousands of dollars. Yeah, so I think that's a big part of the problem with personal training is commercial settings of training, because it's you take this thing, personal training, this product, it's expensive, okay? Mm-hmm. It's never cheap. You sell it half hours or hours, and it's usually somewhere between, I'd say, $60 to $100 an hour in a commercial setting.
Yeah.
And the problem here is you got to split that up 3 or 4 ways usually. You got to split it between the trainer. Typically, in a commercial setting, there's a salesperson that gets a piece. You have some kind of a regional guy who's in charge of all PT sales. And then you have the business itself. So let's say if a session costs $75, the problem is that to the customer, that's a lot of freaking money to spend, especially when you're only working with somebody who might just have a little certification.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm kind of different in the sense, and again, this is probably why my kinesiology background helps me, is because I can at least say that.
You have more to market.
Exactly. And that's why PTs, physical therapists, will probably also do fairly well in this field as well, is because they actually have that, you know, doctorate in physical therapy that they can throw in people's
faces. Provided that they know strength training.
Exactly. Well, that's the problem too, is, you know, that's, people don't mind spending money when they know that they're going to be working with a doctor. It doesn't actually mean that they know anything. And
generally, PTs are great at PT, but not super awesome at instructing actual strength training.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, no, that's a big issue with personal training. Just to get back to that first point, it was just, you know, you have this expensive thing that's getting split up between all these people, and then it's expensive, so it's hard to get somebody to even buy it in the first place. You know, it's not an insurance write-off.
Yeah.
You don't get 4, you know, free PT sessions, personal training sessions with your insurance every year, at least not in any insurance I've ever looked at.
Wouldn't be an awful idea, though.
No, it would be a solid one. Preventative medicine. Yeah. But the problem is, you know, why they don't do this, which is, this is how this all kind of interlocks again, is they would make it something that healthcare would provide, you know, give you some free sessions on if personal trainers actually, you know, had their doctorate.
If there was a more uniform curriculum.
Yes. If we had to go to like a 2-year program, then I think that it would, you know, would be included. But because that's not the case. That's why insurance honestly doesn't, you know, cover any kind of personal training sessions, because for all they know, you know, the trainer could just hurt you. That's how I look at that situation. But yeah, now, all right, so we're back to commercial settings. We went a little off topic there, but yeah, so that's the issue. No one is ever happy because you have someone paying $75 a session and you're splitting it four ways. So typically the trainer themselves, in all honesty, are getting somewhat screwed over. Because training typically is, you know, what actually makes gym's money for the most part.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
the higher profit margins.
Exactly. You know. So we usually get kind of screwed over a little bit in that sense, but you can't really be mad at the gym because at the same time, you know,
I mean, this is like,
it's their business. It's how they make money.
And this is public knowledge too. Like, anybody who's interested in working in training could easily just Google what the salary is for a personal trainer at LA Fitness. On like Glassdoor or something like that. And I'm pretty sure LA Fitness, what is it, $9?
It's $12 an hour. And all sessions are half hours there. Well, they sell them in half hour increments.
So it's basically $6 a session.
Yes, that's where I was going. So unless they change that, again, this was probably like 4 years ago when I worked there. But I'd be surprised if they did.
generally, the rate of pay is going to be a lot better at like a more of a small business,
yes,
like a local commercial facility, as opposed to one of these big national, you know, Gold's LA.
Yeah, national chains will not pay you.
Yeah.
It's not a bad place to start and be, you know, and work at for a few months, just to get your foot in the door, you know, with some experience if you can't get hired at one of these like mom and pop gyms at first.
Yeah.
But there's a fine line of how long you really should stay at one of those places and if you can even survive. Because, you know, when I first started working after LA Fitness, I worked for another commercial facility. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first 3 months I had one client for 1 half-hour a week. Maybe not first three. That was probably the first month. I had one client for 1/2 hour a week. So, yeah. And let's say, and every
it's
time.
It's not an awesome paycheck.
Oh, no, definitely not. So, yeah. 2 hours of work. But, yeah, it's a little rough. Depending where you work too, everything's demographic. So you can get hired at a gym, you'd be super excited, and then, you know, there's just no PT sales at that gym. So your book just doesn't get full.
You're reliant upon another person to actually sign people up for the training in the first place.
Yes. And that's typically how everyone starts out. You might, you know, if you're a good talker, you can go around and talk to people at the gym and be like, hey, do you want a trainer? Blah, blah, blah. But honestly, it's an uncomfortable thing to do.
And I'm going to be honest with you, I have never once seen someone be able to, I mean, specific circumstances, like maybe a couple of times, but to say that it's at all plausible that you'll just get clientele by going to the gym every day and walking around and talking to people, in my opinion, is completely unrealistic.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. And that's the one good thing about commercial settings and why if you're new to personal training, you might want to give one of those, you know, facilities a try for a little bit, is because it is sales oriented there. They are going to put people on your book. So it's good practice. You know, it's a good way to get some experience with training without having to actually go out and find your own clients at first.
Yep.
In all honesty, the more you train, the better you get at training. There's typically never really a scenario that I've ever had where I had to go out and just like approach people and be like, hey, do you want a trainer? Like, I've never had to do that. I've always, any new clientele I bring in is all, it's all word of mouth. It's all
referrals.
Yeah, thank you. It's referrals. It's, and you know, and that's the best marketing you got, man. When it comes down to it.
It's another thing too, just, you know, like so many other industries, the idea that you can just become this wise sage of training and have all of the training modalities, you know, memorized and the different progressions and whatnot.
It's impossible.
You have to be a sales and marketing beast if you're really going to be, you know, one of these guys. Now, you know, for you even, I mean, obviously you were on the training side, you were a little bit more of like a hands-on guy rather than a manager or a salesperson or something like that. But I mean, you're selling your clients each and every day. So yeah. Even though you're not the guy actually doing the sales orientation appointment, you know, you're constantly selling and marketing yourself to the people who are already signed up to work with you.
Yeah, and, no. You just got to be yourself, build rapport with people, you know. It's just, that is sales 101, man. Build rapport.
Yep.
If someone doesn't like you, they're not going to buy from you.
Value.
There you go.
And it's really difficult to, you know, it's such a common thing to hear people say, oh, you have to build value. But, you know, if there's one through line I've been able to observe with people who are successful with training, it's they really figure out what they're able to offer that's different than others and make sure that if nothing else, the sessions that they offer to their clientele are at least different. The worst thing you could be is just kind of a blasé, you know, we're going to do some machines kind of stuff. Even if that's what the person needs, you just, unfortunately, there's that constant relationship between doing what the client needs versus what they want to do. And often what they want to do is something different. And for those types of trainers who just lack that intuition to know that, oh man, this isn't going well, the client's kind of losing interest, you almost have to monitor that on a minute-to-minute basis within the session itself. You know, if you have a session and it doesn't feel like they're into it or it's not going super well, you may have to adjust on the fly and do something completely new and novel.
Yeah, no, that's actually something really good to bring up, because one part of being a good trainer, in all honesty, is being able to think quick on your feet.
Absolutely.
Which is why having a really good knowledge base is so important, because, you know, if, you know, a squat rack is taken up and you have to do, you know, a quad dominant exercise, you got to be able to come up with something, you know, with what you have in front of you that can actually do that. You know, there's plenty of times when I'm at a gym and it's, you know, busy time, 5 o'clock at night, and there's barely any space, and all I have is like a kettlebell and a couple of dumbbells to use. That's all I can get my hands on. And, you know, you have to improvise. It's a big part of what, you know, comes with the job, especially if you're working at a commercial facility where you don't have your own space. You can't get to the, all the equipment that you want. You really have to be able to think on your feet and come up with stuff real quick, because if you can't do it quickly, you're just going to kind of look stupid.
It's a performance. Being a personal trainer is a performance. It's literally like going on stage and performing a routine for somebody. You have to make it informative. You have to make it fun. You have to make them feel comfortable, and it's tough. You know, if you're not someone like myself, I get fatigued with that sort of in-person interaction again and again and again and again.
You're selling yourself every day. Yeah, no, I understand that.
I'll be honest. I could probably schedule more sales appointments than I do, and it's because it's so fatiguing for me. I only have a certain amount of them in the tank, so to speak, on a given week. But that's something I've always been impressed with on, you know, by the folks on your end, the actual technicians who are applying this service day to day, is you guys are, it's so much more demanding of your energy every day. Because I work with somebody once, make sure it's a great session, send them on their way, and as long as it's a good match, you know, I don't probably hear from them again for another couple of months until they want to, you know, change their account or whatever the case may be. You have to keep these people satisfied, man, and that is tough. And that's just, you know, you have to be prepared to be able to do that. You have to, you know, like you said, you have to be able to completely scrap a session that perhaps you had planned and do something entirely different based on the equipment you have available, based on how this particular client is feeling that day, based on how they're responding to what you're having them do. You know, you might catch them on a curmudgeonly day and they were stuck in traffic on the ride home and they're thinking about money and they're stressed and they're thinking, what can I cut from my budget? I don't know. The last couple sessions with Steve, we basically did the same shit anyways. I can just kind of do that on my own. You know, you got to come through on those sort of days and kind of be able to sense that and adjust on the fly.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point to make right there is, man, when people are having money problems, I'll tell you.
You're the first thing to go.
Oh, yes, you are. Even if they really like you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, the people love to cancel their personal training.
Uh-huh.
It's that first thing on the bill, which is kind of sad in this kind of relates to a greater conversation that I wanted to have earlier on, but we kind of missed our chance to segue to that conversation. But personal trainers have so much potential that I think is unrealized, because they're, if you have a great personal trainer who really, you know, takes an interest in your health and is very holistic in their approach, man, that's priceless. I mean, they, in essence, can almost not only behave as your strength coach, but behave as your physician, not an actual physician, in that they're not going to be able to repair your, you know, broken bone or cure your disease. But in order, you know, in regards to just keeping you healthy, if you have a really good personal trainer, it's almost the perfect person within society in order to, you know, to delegate that responsibility of maintaining your health too. And that's actually, you know, one of the common threads that I've struggled with as my journey of being a trainer is personal training almost serves as an assessment to figure out what's really going on in someone's life. Because in a way, hiring a personal trainer is usually almost a cry for help for a lot of people. They're very unsatisfied. You get the people who just want to be healthy. You know, I have plenty of clients who, frankly, they just have the money and they like me. They like the workouts and they just want to maintain a certain degree of activity. So they hire me and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and again, you'll get a trainee who's like very, you know, very motivated. They're looking for something specific. But then as you get kind of involved with them and you start building that rapport, you realize, oh, you don't need strength training. Your job is what's killing you. Your mm-hmm. job is the reason you're overweight or not happy with how you look or don't feel well on a day-to-day basis. You know, and that's the insidious thing. You find those things out with training, or maybe you realize that somebody is, you know, not taking care of some other element of their life. They're not sleeping, or they have a bad family life, or whatever the case may be. You're going to encounter all different situations. But I feel as if personal training is ironically almost the perfect assessment to figure out what's truly ailing someone.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes sessions turn into psychiatry sessions.
Yes, very often. And sometimes they turn into psychiatry sessions for the trainer.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's
you
true.
End up talking to your clients about, you know, your struggles in life and whatnot.
Hey, man, that's actually it's a part of how you build rapport, in all honesty.
Yeah, you gotta become talk vulnerable too. Yeah. With people.
You got to tell them what's going on in your life when they tell you what's going on in theirs. It's just how it goes.
And it's
reality, man. It's like another, you know, you're just trying to build some friendships in a way.
Yeah. And I feel as if you've approached your career and your book of clients like that. And I feel as if we really were trying to accurately summarize what the secret sauce is in your attention. It's probably that.
I would agree.
Well, Stephen, we've said a lot.
Corey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being a guest here on the White Belts in Life podcast, the celebratory weekend edition.
In which thanks we for are, having me, man.
We're enjoying our 1,000 downloads. Seems like we're making a big deal about
congrats.
It, but I think we're still just a little
bit. Hey, man, it's a big deal. Thousands is a lot.
It's really not a big deal, but it's just, to me personally, to think that 1,000 times people have pressed a play button on this thing that I make in my basement, that's kind of just weird. So we like it, though. Keep listening, folks. All right. This is when I cue the outro music. Godspeed.